Thank you, Sharon. Last week, as part of the Gloucester History Festival, I heard a talk entitled 21 Women Who Changed the Course of History. Now, had the speaker stuck to her brief really strictly, there'd have been about time for about 2.5 minutes per woman. So she very sensibly picked a few as examples, and we all got out before the next talk was due to start. So this morning, with everything that we need to fit into the schedule, I'm attempting 9 plagues. Well, no, let me rephrase that. I'm attempting to talk about 9 plagues in 10 minutes, maybe 11. Apologies in advance to anybody who has a phobia of frogs. We're looking through this life of Moses, and we saw last week how God had called him to go to Pharaoh to request the release of the Jewish people who are being worked to death as slaves. Now, this is a daunting thing to do. Pharaoh was the most powerful man in the world at the time, and Moses was a shepherd. This is like sending a farm labourer to go and negotiate with the President of the United States. Like anyone could negotiate. You're there before me. With Pharaoh. Like anyone could negotiate with Pharaoh. Moses felt weak. He felt completely... sorry, I haven't got the flicker here. Could you... Is it? Thank you very much. Forgotten all about that. So Moses feels weak. He feels completely inadequate for the task. And he's right, because this isn't a fair fight. But actually, there's something else going on. Moses is insignificant, but he's on a mission from God, and God is unstoppable. God has promised, as you may remember from last week, that he'll be with them in this. And so suddenly the odds swing firmly in favour of Moses. Now, Pharaoh is stubborn. We've seen that already in this series. He refuses to let the people go. And so at God's bequest, at God's leading, Moses calls down a series of 10 plagues on Egypt. And these are the ones that we're all covering this morning. There's a plague of blood and of frogs, the second one, which we'll look at in a little bit more detail later. Gnats, flies, livestock, boils, hail, locusts, darkness, and then the firstborn, although Pete's going to do that one next week. Now, there's some variation here, but the rough pattern, as you probably know, is this. First of all, a plague is sent to underline that what God says is serious, that he's serious about this request for Moses to be allowed to take the people out of Egypt. And what usually happens is Moses holds out for a bit, but eventually he relents and says, okay, then you can go. And so then the oppression, the pressure is taken off, and that plague is dealt with, and it's finished. And surprise, surprise, Pharaoh backs out of his promise. And I picked the plague of frogs because in some ways it's the easiest. And it's also probably the funniest. You'll have seen children's Bibles with cartoons of frogs everywhere. Cute frogs at that, popping up. And our grown-up Bibles tells us that that's right, as you'll have noticed in the reading this morning. We read that frogs will come up into your palace, Pharaoh, and your bedroom, and into your bed, into the houses of your officials and on your people, and into your ovens and kneading troughs. The frogs will come up on you and your people and all your officials. As one writer puts it, it's very difficult to get a good night's sleep. I don't know how this writer knows this, by the way. To get a good night's sleep or enjoy the royal harem with a bed full of frogs. Frogs in the kitchen, on the royal salad, in the royal cereal. Frogs in the garage, crunching under the wheels in the royal chariot. I, he says, would be very careful before using the royal bathroom. Gives a whole new meaning to the phrase the royal wee, doesn't it? And so in some ways it's funny. And actually the way that the Bible tells it makes it even funnier. I don't know if you noticed that little line that's in the that was in the reading earlier. You know, Pharaoh is plagued with frogs. He is being tormented by these things. So he turns to his own magicians and says, can you do something about this? And they say, yeah, sure, we'll do something. We'll make some more frogs. It's great, isn't it? It's funny. But it's only funny, of course, if it's happening to someone else. As a student, I lived in a house that suffered a plague of slugs. One of us stepped out of bed one morning, well, probably afternoon, and the first thing we heard was a squishing sound. John was never the same again. And it's funny to hear about. It's not so funny to be peeling dead slug off the sole of your feet. A plague of frogs might seem funny to us, but you live through it, and it would drive you bonkers, wouldn't it? Soon Pharaoh is saying to Moses, pray to make the frogs go away. To which Moses asks this very perceptive question. Yeah, this question. He says, yeah, certainly it'd be an honour to. When would you like them gone? To which Pharaoh gives a bizarre answer. He says, tomorrow. You'd think he'd say yesterday, wouldn't you? This thing is tormenting him, driving him mad. His life is miserable. Wouldn't you want that thing gone now? But the Bible tells us the reason that Pharaoh makes this ridiculous decision. It's because he's hard-hearted. It's because he's stubborn. We saw that in verse 15. The following day, Moses does pray and the frogs do disappear. And then in verse 15 we read, but when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his heart. I would not listen to Moses and his brother Aaron, just as the Lord had said. And I think that hardened heart, that stubborn, very strong stubborn speak that Pharaoh had, was because that shows in the way that he wanted the frogs gone another day. I think he figured either he could handle it or that he could sort this out himself. And perhaps you can identify with that kind of stubborn independence too. Because we're all a bit like Pharaoh. Maybe you think, well, there's no great joy in it, but I guess I can live with the frogs. Maybe you figure you'll deal with them later. Don't we often do this? We know that a certain behaviour pattern is killing us. It's ruining our souls. And yet we continue to hold that grudge. Or we continue to watch that stuff on the internet. Or we continue to rack up big debts. Or we consume too much. Or we stay in that really unhealthy relationship. Or we push people away with a sense of our own superiority. Just examples of some of the rich variety of frogs that we figure we can live with. After all, it's just who we are. So we carry on, perhaps with the thought, the vague thought that it'll change tomorrow or next year or whenever. Someday, I saw this outside Debenhams this week, someday isn't a day of the week. You decide you're going to do something about this someday, you will never do it. Meanwhile, we live with the frogs. The Egyptians thought that Pharaoh, as well as being the most important and powerful man in the world, was also a god. And Pharaoh's problem is he thought he was a god as well. And it's the problem that you and I share as well. The Bible tells us that this is our problem. We think we are God. We think that we know better, as we see ever since Adam and Eve. That we can run our lives independently of the one who made us, and that we can cope until something happens and we stop coping. Don't say, I'll do it tomorrow. Do it today. Don't be like Pharaoh and figure that you are firmly in control and that you don't need God to tell you how to be living. One of the scriptures in the New Testament, quoting the Old Testament, says, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as you did in the rebellion. And another reason that we need to act today and not harden our hearts is because we don't know what tomorrow will bring. We don't know if there's a tomorrow. I've had a period of about 10 days where three people from my previous congregation have died. One of them was an old fella and it was expected. One of them was a few years older than me. He fell, broke some ribs, went into hospital and never came out. One lad was in his mid-20s. And he didn't come to our church, but he came to our youth club faithfully. He was a lovely lad. He heard this message. I don't know if he put off to tomorrow what he could have done today. None of us know how long we've got. Some of us And I've had conversations with friends in the past who've said, well, yeah, I'll sort it out on my deathbed. We don't always get the luxury of a deathbed. We need to make sure that we're dealing with these things beforehand. The offer that God makes today is to forgive us and to offer us a new start. We're told that Jesus took the punishment for all our wrongs, all our sins on the cross at Easter. All the ways that we've made a mess of life have been dealt with as he offers us a clean slate. God offers us so much a better way to live, a new start with him, rather than try and work it out on our own. And as Christians, we need to hear that message as well. We need to keep preaching the gospel to ourselves and to hear the gospel. Because we can say, yeah, I've dealt with that. I've even been baptized. But then we go back to living like Pharaoh, thinking that we know better. Well, Wendy has got to the point in her life where she wants to stand up with knees knocking and declare, I'm done with the frogs. And I'm trying to do life now with God at the very center of who I am and what I do. Her baptism is a very public declaration of that. And as we prepare to hear her story of how she's got this far, she's chosen some of the songs this morning. And the next one that we're about to sing is one of those. If the musicians could come up, that'd be great. It's Be Thou My Vision. And it speaks of that desire for God to come in and to change us, to be at the center of our lives again. It's a prayer that we can sing together, and it's a prayer that God will answer if we pray it to him in the words of this song. Whether we're not quite there yet in terms of following Jesus, or maybe we've been following Jesus for a while and we've slipped back, or whatever our position might be, all of us can sing this song as a song of dedicating ourselves afresh to Jesus.